Hello. Welcome to Illinois Radio Reader. This is Lisa bringing you the News Gazette today, May the 6th, 2026. It's Wednesday. Hope you're having a great day. Let's get started on the front page. Today there's a big article with the title Superstars. It's from the Champaign-Urbana Schools Foundation, and there are 9 second-to-none teachers in the spotlight in today's CU Schools Foundation Spring Fling at Riggs Beer Company. There's a bus driver, a bilingual school secretary, a head custodian, and 6 other support staffers and paraprofessionals who go the extra mile in Champaign's Unit 4 and Urbana's District 116. And I'll just read the names. There's a short quip about each person, but I'll tell you the names of these 9 wonderful teachers: Stephanie Cahoon, Elizabeth Chin, Kwame Clemens, Mara Kraft, Sean Derby, Jamie Perry, John Skybar, Erica Obaldo, and Brian Washington. Congratulations to all those wonderful teachers. Continuing on the front page, an article about the attempted murder plea. Urbana man gets 31 years in shooting in the heart of campus town, by Luke Taylor. An Urbana man has pleaded guilty to attempted murder in an October incident in which 5 shots were fired in the heart of campus town, injuring one man and sending students and other bargoers fleeing. DeCoven Stevens, 19, will serve 31 years in prison for the single count of attempted murder. A second count, as well as a charge of unlawful possession of a firearm, were dismissed as part of the plea agreement. Under truth in sentencing laws, he must complete at least 85% of his sentence. The charges stem from an incident that began when police were called at 12:26 a.m. October 18th to Green Street in the campus town area for a shooting. Assistant State's Attorney Andrew Biquet said when police were called at 12:26 a.m., there was Andrew Biquet said that when officers arrived on the scene that Saturday, the bars were open and they saw people fleeing the area. He said they located a victim in the street who had at least 3 gunshot wounds to the shoulder and back, and another shot shattered the window of the Royal Barbecue restaurant on Green Street. All told, police said they found 5 .40 caliber casings on the scene. According to footage from vehicle dash camera and surveillance footage from a nearby business, Stevens argued briefly that the victim before an unknown woman pulled them away. Stevens then ran up behind him with a gun, and when the victim ran out into the street, fired at him at least 5 times. He was also captured on surveillance footage inside the Raising Cane's on Green Street right before the shooting, where employees were able to identify him because he also worked there. After Stevens was identified, police executed a search warrant at his home and recovered 2 firearms, a pistol and a rifle. One had the serial number filed off, and the other didn't have a serial number at all. Assistant State's Attorney Scott Larson said that in the time since the incident, investigators found that bullet casings at the scene matched one of the firearms found in his residence. After the incident, the victim told police he'd been in the wrong place at the wrong time. But hours after the incident, a house in the same cul-de-sac as the one where Stevens lives was hit by gunfire. Also, not long after the incident, Stevens admitted to being involved but said that he only fired because he believed that the victim was going to shoot him first. And the last article on the front page is from Rantoul, with the heading, Accidental Increase on Property Tax Bills Prompts Reimbursement. Residents still must pay full amount listed on the first installment, by Jana Wiersema. Around the area, village residents may have gone into sticker shock after looking at their annual property tax bills this week. Rantoul's property tax rate, which is $1,115 for every 100 of taxable value, was accidentally listed. This is in dollars. Was accidentally listed as $1.85 for every 100, sorry about that, officials announced Tuesday afternoon. For a home with a market value of $150,000, this would result in a difference of about $350, estimated village administrator Scott Eisenhower said. We're incredibly sorry and sincerely apologize for the inconvenience that we know this has caused our taxpayers, he said, adding that the village will reimburse property owners for the overages. Village officials said in a social media post that the mistake was discovered after bills were already finalized and distributed. There was a bond that the village took out in 2025, Eisenhower explained, and the intention was for the bond to be fully abated. And unfortunately, it was only partially abated. That meant part of it was not put on the property tax, while some of it was. And the intention was that none of it would be. He added that this bond, which is for the new electric substation, will be repaid out of the electric fund. When asked what property owners should do, Eisenhower replied, they'll need to pay the full amount as indicated on their property tax bill. And then once they make their first installment payment, we'll be working with the county treasurer's and the clerk's office to get a record of that. The village will then send the property owner a reimbursement check covering the amount of the accidental increase so that these funds can go toward their second installment. When asked how quickly individuals can expect to receive reimbursement, Eisenhower said this will depend on how quickly the village can get the information it needs from the county. We're working with them to try to finalize some of the details of how that process will work, and we're just not there yet, so I can really give a definitive timeline right now. I cannot, he said. However, in his hope that a property owner would receive the check within 30 to 60 days after paying the first installment of their property tax bill, Eisenhower also advised that if an individual's bill is paid via an escrow account, they should remit the reimbursement check to whoever holds their mortgage. That way, their escrow for next year won't go up based on this year's property tax rate, because they'll have the offsetting money through the check, he said. Continuing on under our communities in Section A6, an article from Gibson City. Solar Farm Developer Withdraws Permit Application by Will Brumlevy. A California developer has withdrawn its application for a special use permit for the construction and operation of a 2.25 megawatt solar farm on farmland just northeast of Gibson City. 13 days after the city's planning commission voted 6-1 to recommend the city council deny San Francisco-based Forefront Power's application, the company notified city officials of its request to withdraw. The so-called Ford Solar Project received pushback from several neighboring landowners during the April 21st hearing preceding the planning commission's vote. The commission's recommended denial of the application was expected to be considered by the council this month. The project, owned by Illinois Solar Ford Project, LLC, a company with the same listed address as Forefront Power, was proposed to be built on a 23.42-acre triangular parcel of agriculturally zoned land at Ford County Road 600 East in Illinois 54 in Drummer Township. No longer, though. Please accept this letter as the official withdrawal request from Illinois Solar Ford Project L1, LLC of Ford Solar, special use permit, application for approval by the City of Gibson, Illinois, stated the letter signed by Kristen Frusciani, Vice President of Forefront Power, and addressed to the Planning Commission's Chairman, Chase McCall, and Deputy City Clerk and Advisor, Jan Hall. Re-request you please withdraw our request from any action by the Gibson City Council for the special use permit application. We also request you send us verification that the request has been withdrawn and will not be presented to the Gibson City Council for any action. McCall said neighbors voiced a number of concerns about the project, including its proximity to homes and the potential for the solar panels to cause glare issues and groundwater contamination. Among the seven commissioners present, McCall was the only one to vote in favor of the issuance of a permit for the project. McCall said he did so because of the project's potential benefits to the community, including the temporary stimulation of the economic of the economy through the creation of jobs, an increase in tax revenue from the involved land for local taxing bodies, and the possibility that the city's residents could apply to receive energy credits on their utility bills via an agreement with Ameren, Illinois. From a planning commissioner's perspective, I have to think about what's in the best interest for Gibson City, McCall said. The city has zoning authority within 1.5 miles of its corporate limits. And an article from Urbana by the Illinois Secretary of State's office with the heading, VO e-bikes largely unaffected by proposed regulations, by Jana Wiersema. Proposed state legislation regulating high-speed electric bicycles and other transportation devices would have little impact on the turquoise VO e-bikes often seen around town. The bike share company operates nearly 1,200 e-bikes across Champaign-Urbana and the University of Illinois campus, said Jeff Hoover, its director of government partnerships. All of these are VO's Cosmo model, which is categorized as a Class 2 low-speed e-bike under state law. A Class 2 bike is throttle-powered primarily, Hoover explained. The pedals are operational, but they're not geared, and they're not electrified. The Cosmo e-bikes are capped at 15 miles per hour, he added. Senate Bill 3336, which is part of a safety campaign led by Illinois Secretary of State Alex Julianis, focuses more on regulations. Regulations for high-speed bikes. As these devices become faster, heavier, and more powerful, our laws must keep pace to protect riders and the public, Giannoulias said. This initiative closes dangerous regulatory gaps, creates uniformity across Illinois communities, and ensures riders understand the responsibilities that come with high-speed electrical devices. We're replacing a confusing patchwork of local rules with clear statewide standards that prioritize safety. According to the Secretary of State's office, Illinois currently lacks laws regulating e-bikes and other micromobility devices that can travel faster than 28 miles per hour. Among other things, the bill would require riders of e-bikes and electric motorcycles capable of driving over that threshold to have a driver's license, title, registration, and insurance, state officials said. These requirements would also apply to gas-powered bicycles able to travel faster than 28 miles per hour. The legislation would also enact new regulations for high-speed micro-mobility devices, such as electric scooters, skateboards, and unicycles. These devices would be prohibited from operating over 28 miles per hour on roads, bike lanes, paths, bike paths, and sidewalks, state officials said. In addition, riders of any electric micro-mobility device must be at least 16 years old. Additionally, the bill would prohibit individuals under the age of 15 from operating Class 2 e-bikes, such as VO's Cosmo model. We fully support that, Hoover said. Our user agreement actually stipulates that you must be 18. The proposed legislation also clarifies that laws on driving under the influence would apply to the operation of low-speed electric bicycles and low-speed gas bicycles. Using electric micromobility devices while under the influence would also be prohibited. The Illinois Senate passed the bill unanimously, and it was assigned to the House Vehicles and Safety Committee on April 27th. The proposed effective date is January 1st. E-bikes and electric motorcycles bought before this date would be exempt from the title requirement, but would still have to be registered, Giannoulias' office said. Micromobility is quickly transforming how Illinoisans get around and is now part of everyday life. But innovation without guardrails puts people at risk, says State Senator Ram Villavalam, a Democrat from Chicago, who sponsored the bill. This legislation brings safety, accountability, and common sense protections to reflect today's reality and new era of mobility. Hoover said he appreciates that the state is trying to enact common sense ideas to drive safety, without, in my view anyway, restricting people's access to electric mobility when they need it. In addition to Champaign-Urbana, VO also operates a bike share program at Southern Illinois University in Carbondale. Hoover said that VO generally caps its vehicles at 15 miles per hour, and there's nowhere in the country. We're currently operating our bikes faster than 20 miles per hour, let alone 28. And there's a picture here of a VO Cosmo e-bike as it's sitting at the intersection of Randolph and Maple Street in Champaign. Let's head over now to J. Mark Powell's Holy Cow History in the opinion section. And there is a vintage picture here of Joseph Goebbels, then Chancellor Adolf Hitler, Reich sports leader Hans von Sommer, and Austin and General Field Marshal Werner von Blomberg observing the Olympic Games in August of 1936 in Berlin. And the title is The American Woman Who Kissed Hitler at the Olympics. 3 months ago, the Winter Olympics dazzled in Milan and Cortina d'Ampezzo, Italy. 2 years from now, all eyes will be on Los Angeles as the United States hosts its first Olympics in Salt Lake City in 2002 and its first Summer Games since Atlanta in 1996. Everyone will be watching as the world's greatest athletes come together to make history. That's certainly what happened in Berlin in 1936. We've all done something impulsive, a spur-of-the-moment decision that when you thought about it later wasn't such a good idea. Nearly 90 years ago, an American woman acted rashly and was forever linked by history to one of its worst monsters. George and Carla DeVries were typical American tourists vacationing in Europe that year. The dairy farmers from the Los Angeles suburb of Norwalk, California, did what many of their countrymen did that year and seized the upcoming Summer Olympics as the perfect opportunity to see the continent. But this wasn't any ordinary Olympiad, because the 1936 Games were held in Berlin, capital of Nazi Germany. The swastika flew above Olympic Stadium, and looming over it all was the official host, Adolf Hitler. In fairness to DeVries, Hitler had not yet revealed himself to the world as the apex of evil. He was just one of the many bad guys ruling Europe at the time. Joseph Stalin, Benito Mussolini, Francisco Franco, and lots of lesser tyrants as well. World War II and the Holocaust were still several years away. The Nazis were on their best behavior then, too. They toned down their hateful rhetoric, plastered fake smiles on their faces, and built shiny venues to host athletic competitions. The Reich's leaders hoped to use the games to showcase their racial superiority claptrap, though that didn't turn out as they had planned. The DeVrieses were among the large crowd, estimated at about 30,000, watching swimming contests on August 15th. Hitler had a ringside seat. The men's 150-meter freestyle event had just wrapped up. Carla asked guards if Der Fuhrer would autograph her Olympic ticket. During a break in the action, she was escorted to his seat. Hitler seemed to be having one of his rare pleasant days. Carla handed him the ticket, which he obligingly signed and returned. Then an idea popped into her head, and she pounced. Literally, the 40-year-old lunged over the railing and tried to kiss the dictator. Hitler pulled back, grinning from ear to ear like an awkward schoolboy. Carla lunged again. This time her lips grazed the Fuhrer's cheek. Hitler wheeled away, smiling stupidly through a shell-shocked expression. Security guards grabbed Carla. As they led her off, thousands of people who witnessed the scene cheered wildly. "I think we better get out of here," she told George, who agreed. They lost no time returning to their hotel. Carla had, after all, just made people laugh at the one person in Nazi Germany that you didn't make fun of. Back at his palatial office inside the Reich's chancellery, Hitler was furious. How could his SS bodyguards have failed so terribly? What if the woman had lunged at him with a gun or a grenade or a knife. It had been a major security lapse. There was a huge shakeup in Hitler's detail. Some officers were fired, others demoted. The moment was caught on film, but the Nazis censored it, preventing most Germans from learning what had happened. Yet the Olympics is an international gathering after all, and stories about it ran in newspapers around the world, including the New York Times. Why did Carla do it? As she said afterwards, "It's just that I'm a woman of impulses, I guess. I don't know why I did it. Certainly, I hadn't planned such a thing." In 1936 Olympics, as they weren't Carla's only brush with fame, she made the news again for preventing the suicide of a patient at a mental institution, and once more when her husband's dairy had a labor strike. Still, this was one moment in her life she was asked about again and again. "Come on, Grandma, tell us about the time you kissed Hitler." She went right on telling the tale until her death in 1985 at age 92. The censored film finally surfaced a few years ago. Although the incident lasted less than 10 seconds, it shows the man who brought misery to millions made to squirm. Not bad for a middle-aged American mom on vacation. That's great. And continuing on with more local news in section A10, an article from Urbana by Luke Taylor from the Mount Calvary Missionary Baptist Church with the heading, "Champagne Man Pleads Guilty to Setting Fire to Sanctuary." A Champagne man has pleaded guilty to setting a church on fire late last year. Dalton Whitlock, 33, was charged with a single count of arson in a November 19th fire that caused thousands of dollars of damage to the sanctuary of Mount Calvary Missionary Baptist Church. Champaign police and firefighters were called to the church at 12:28 p.m. that Wednesday, where they saw moderate smoke coming from the roof eaves and windows near the top of the sanctuary. The incident was upgraded to a two-alarm fire as firefighters got to work with crews from both the Champaign and Urbana departments, extending multiple hose lines to contain and extinguish the fire. Investigators soon determined that the fire didn't have an accidental source because it appeared to start from multiple points in the building. Inside a broken window, they found what appeared to be a campsite with multiple identifiable items, including a sleeping bag. A food item found at the campsite was found to have been brought earlier that day by Whitlock, police said. He was also identified in surveillance footage from outside the church, carrying items matching those found in the campsite. Among those belongings were four lighters. While Whitlock has pleaded guilty, his sentence was not decided during plea negotiations. He's set to return to court for a sentencing hearing in late June. And another local news by Jana Wiersma in Urbana. From the Urbana Police, Council approves interim deputy chief through June of 2027. History repeated itself this week as the City Council voted to approve Mayor Deshaun Williams' appointment of interim Deputy Police Chief Michael Cervantes in a 4-2 vote. Cervantes was previously promoted to the role by the same margin about 6 months ago. Aldermen Chris Evans and Grace Wilkin were the two no votes both times. In October, several members of the public urged the council not to approve Cervantes' initial appointment based on his involvement in the controversial arrest of Alaya Lewis on April 10th of 2020. No members of the public chose to speak at the council's Monday meeting. However, the item was quickly voted on without discussion. Cervantes' reappointment is for a term ending on or before June 30th of 2027. Congratulations, Mr. Cervantes. Looking forward to continuing this work and building on the foundation that we're creating, Williams said. According to city officials, Cervantes has over 22 years of experience in law enforcement and has been with the Urbana Police Department since 2006 in a number of roles, including lieutenant in the patrol division, detective in the street crimes unit, canine handler, patrol sergeant, lieutenant in the criminal investigations division, and in the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force program. Cervantes previously served as a military police master-at-arms in the U.S. Navy. His education includes the School of Police Staff and Command at Northwestern University, a master's degree in law enforcement and public safety leadership from the University of San Diego, a bachelor's degree in general studies from Eastern Illinois University, and an associate's degree in applied science with a law enforcement focus from Excelsior College. City officials said in October that Cervantes is the department's first Hispanic deputy chief and noted that he has received several awards. And we have just enough time for another opinion piece, this time by Jim Dye. State revenue gains continue to fall under category of modest. The state of Illinois received seemingly good April revenue news that unfortunately turned out to be misleading. Total revenues added up to $7.305 billion, the second highest month on record, according to financial analysts. But they amounted to just a 2% increase over April of 2025, prompting a description of them as modest, generally aligned with expectations, according to the legislature's Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability. Revenues deposited in the state's general fund increased by $146 million, or 2%, in April, compared with the same month a year ago, said Eric Nagel, the commission's revenue manager. The April result continued to mirror most monthly reports since the fiscal year began on July 1st of 2025, up slightly most months, but genuinely unexciting for revenue-hungry Governor J.B. Pritzker and legislators. Just last week, some legislators were pushing for a millionaire's tax amendment to the Illinois Constitution, but the idea was abandoned after an insufficient number of House Democrats signed on to the measure, which needed a 60% majority in both the House, State, and Senate. House Speaker Chris Welch, one of the amendment's sponsors, subsequently conceded the plan was vague and in need of more study. Pritzker and legislators were hoping to wrap up this work this month on the 2026-27 operating budget that takes effect on July 1st. In the meantime, they were hoping for a strong revenue gain in the final quarter of the fiscal year that so far has failed to reveal itself. The big three tax resources, sales tax and personal, and corporate income taxes were mixed in April. Corporate income tax revenues declined 9%, $135 million in April, compared with the $1.5 billion generated in the same month a year ago. Personal income tax revenue increased 1%, $54 million, compared with $5.317 billion in April of 2025. Finally, sales tax revenue jumped by 2.4%, $24 million, as compared with $1.18 billion in April of 2025. Federal aid fell by $45 million in April, although it's up for the year to the $210 million, an increase of 123% for the first 10 months of 2026-27, compared with 2025-26. Lesser revenue sources, cataloged as all other state sources, increased by $50 million in April compared with April of 2025. They include interest income plus tax revenue of alcohol, tobacco, insurance, and utilities. Gambling, the lottery, gaming, and sports betting were all up. The lottery by $18 million, gaming by $55 million, and sports betting by $153 million. Illinois has brought in $46.564 billion during the current fiscal year, up 3.8% over the same period last fiscal year. In preparing the April report, Nagel noted that income tax revenue continues to provide an increasingly large share of state revenue. He said it's expected to account for approximately 60% of total fiscal year 2026 revenue, saying that represents a significant shift from prior decades. As recently as fiscal year 2004, income taxes have made roughly 30% of all revenue, he said. This growing reliance reflects a combination of income tax rate increases, most recently in 2018, and the relatively stagnant or declining performance of all other revenue sources. And I'm going to take a break here with our first half of the News Gazette, and we'll return shortly to read the second half.